The Bureau won't stand a chance. We have the Black Book and the Black Key. We've got the power to do whatever we want. This world could be ours. Emotion flickers across his face. I don't want to be alone. Then you shouldn't hurt the people that care about you, I say. I don't want power. I just want my brother back. You're no better than Maria, Dylan snaps. Tears drop down his cheeks. I should have known it by your reaction to foul magic. But I guess I hoped. His expression goes ice cold. Then I'm going to have to take your magic. Even if it kills me? This is your choice, he shouts. Defend yourself. I shake my head, tears welling in my own eyes. I don't know how. Then this is goodbye, Amari Peters. I have to do something. My stun stick. I make a run for the front door, but Dylan knocks me off my feet with a wave of his hand. My shoulder crashes into the wall, and I get up to my knees. He really does have Moreau's magic. I throw open my arms. Solace! I begin to glow, but Dylan puts out my light. You'll have to do better than fair magic. His hands erupt in silver flames. Your life depends on it. The magnophobia spell is on the tip of my tongue, but I can't bring myself to say it. I promised myself I'd never use foul magic again, that I would be a good magician, no matter what. Someone Quentin would be proud of. I close my eyes, my whole body shaking. I'm sorry, Quentin. They were right all along. I'm not good enough. No! I shake those doubts from my mind. That's not me anymore. I'm not the girl who gives up. I'm the girl who tries, the girl who fights, the girl who believes. My eyes open with a burning realization. I'm unstoppable. Something inside me bursts, and my whole body goes white hot. The Black Book flips open, and dozens of Amaris appear around the office, each with their hands lifted to the sky. Finally, an Amari in glittering armor appears at the center of the room. She winks at me. Dylan staggers backward. How? This isn't like the other times my magic has overflowed. Because I'm not just reacting. This is me deciding. Dylan won't win. At that, the armored Amari lifts her hands to the sky and says, Finis. Thunder booms overhead, and lightning explodes through the roof and into her hand. The last thing I see is an eruption of blinding light. 33. Normally, I'm not a fan of music that doesn't have a beat. I mean, if I can't bounce along to it, I'm just not interested. But there's something about this soft little voice I hear. It's just so nice. And the melody is so catchy. My eyes open to the bluest eyes hovering above me. I blink a couple times, and Agent Fiona leans back a little, a big grin spreading across her face. There ye are. Agent Fiona turns around. She's awake. Next thing I know, Elsie is on top of me, hugging me and kissing my cheek, like I just rose from the grave or something. Wait, did I? I'm so glad you're okay, says Elsie. If you weren't, I don't know what I would have done.
Let the kid breathe, will ya? Laughs Agent Magnus.
Yeah, I say, with a small laugh. Let the kid breathe. Now that I've got a little space, I can see that I'm in a hospital room. It looks and feels like a hospital room anyway. My mom works at the hospital, so I've been in enough of them to know what it feels like when you're inside of one. But where's all the equipment? The only thing I see is a lady in white in front of a microphone. That's when it hits me.
She's the lady from the departmental presentations who sang that guy out of a coma. I've just been sung back to health. I blink, and everything comes back to me all at once. Then, right out of my mouth, "Moreau! The Black Book! Dylan! Did you stop them? Wait, Elsie! Did you really breathe fire?" Elsie laughs. "Sure did. It's not a full shift yet, but I think I'm finally starting the process." "As for the rest of us," says Agent Fiona, "we didn't do anything. By the time we tracked down the Jolly Roger, ye were slumped over the Black Book and the Black Key, and Dylan was unconscious inside a cage of lightning. Had a devil of a time getting him out." "Then we won?" I ask.
"We did," says Agent Magnus, "thanks to you."
"Can I see my brother?" I ask quickly. "And Maria? I've got so much I want to say to both of them."
"They're still being operated on by the Curse Breakers," says Agent Fiona. "But we're hopeful."
I lay back on my pillow and close my eyes. Thank goodness. But as good as this moment feels, I always pictured sharing it with my partner. It was Dylan the whole time. I get a rush of emotions thinking about him, though I couldn't even say what they all are. I should hate him for lying to me, but there's still a part of me that wishes I could go back to when he was still my friend. The Dylan in Dr. Underhill's office feels like a different person. I wonder if I ever even knew the real him.
"We know," says Agent Fiona. "Dr. Underhill was a paranoid fellow, as any keyholder has a right be. He kept surveillance cameras all over his office. We've got the whole incident recorded."
"Where is he now?" Agent Fiona and Agent Magnus both frown a little.
"I'm sorry, but that's classified information."
"But don't go fretting over it," says Agent Magnus. "The day is saved. Not bad for your first day as a junior agent."
Did I hear that right? I'm a junior agent? I get the scholarship?
"That's right," says Chief Crow, walking over to my bed.
"Congratulations. You aren't mad that I went after the Black Key?"
"Well," says Chief Crow, "as you so eloquently explained to Agent Fiona, you were only a trainee, so you weren't technically a member of the Bureau yet. Oh, they grumbled and groaned for 6 hours straight at their emergency session of the Supernatural World Congress, but no one could fault your logic. However, I do hope you'll take something like this to an adult in the future."
"What in the world were you thinking?"
asks Agent Magnus.
"I was following that look you gave me," I say, sitting up a little, "when Director Van Helsing accused you of letting the hybrids in."
"That was a help Agent Fiona get the Black Key look."
Agent Magnus goes red in the face.
"Not a go save the world on your own look."
I bite my lip.
"Well, you might want to work on your looks then."
"I'm with Peters," says Agent Fiona, laughing. She gives Agent Magnus's scruffy beard a tug. "It's like I'm always telling ye, things would go a lot better if ye only put a little more effort into your looks." Later in the evening, once everyone has cleared out of my room, I get a visit from the last person in the world I expect.
"Mama?"
Mama runs over to my bed and throws her arms around me.
"Oh, baby girl, I'm so glad you're all right.
When they called me to say that you were recovering from something called severe post-magic overexertion, I didn't know what to think."
"I can't believe they let you visit me," I say.
Mama leans back a little. She looks so lost.
"I can't even pretend to understand half the things I saw on the way down here. There was a man with no face in the elevator with me."
Mama shakes her head.
"But face or no face, nothing was gonna keep me away from my daughter.
I smile.
Mama swallows and says, "They also said you found Quentin."
I nod, and Mama covers her face.
"Oh, man, you're going to make me cry."
She reaches out, and we hold each other, crying and laughing. Quentin's room is located in the ICU of the Department of Supernatural Health, aka the Intense Curses Unit. Me and Mama hold hands as we walk the halls to his room. The curse breakers were able to revive Maria, but Quentin hasn't woken up. The senior curse breaker who came to meet with us explained that he'd done all he could, and now it's just a matter of waiting. My brother could wake up tomorrow, or he might never wake up. I won't lie, it wasn't the easiest news to get. But I've got to keep hoping that my brother will be okay, that he'll wake up sooner rather than later. Hope has brought me this far. Surely it'll get me my brother back healthy. I don't know what to do with my hands when Laura Van Helsing runs over and throws her arms around me. Even though it's just a hug, it still feels dangerous coming from her.
"Thank you for bringing my sister back,"
Laura says, taking a step back. "I know I'm probably the last person you want to talk to, but thanks anyway." I give her a small smile. "I told you I'd do it." She nods and says, "About Dylan, I had no idea. He fooled all of us," I say. Laura's eyes turn sad, and she runs back up the hall toward her mom. When we enter Quentin's room, we find him resting peacefully on the fluffiest pillows you can imagine. Maria sits in a chair beside the bed, holding his hand. When she notices us, she flushes and stands. "Maria Van Helsing," she says, extending a trembling hand. I can't get over how much prettier she looks in person. Mama shakes it first, and then I do.
"Thank you," Maria says to me. "I'm so sorry that it was me who woke up and not Quentin. The curse breakers think it's because he was giving off more of his life essence, so I'd have to give less. It's just like him to try and one-up me like that."
"That's Quentin," I say softly. "Never lets anyone beat him in anything." Maria smiles and relaxes a little. Mama says,
"There's nothing to be sorry for, sweetheart. I'm sure your family is happy to have you home again."
"Are you the reason Mama gets to come down here?" I ask Maria. She flushes again and nods. "My family pulled some strings to get special permission. After Dylan, it's really the least we could do."
"Thanks," I say.
"Do you want to talk to Quentin?" Maria asks.
"Huh?"
I say.
"What do you mean?"
"That's what I was doing when you came in," says Maria. "My supernatural ability." "No, I'm sorry. There's no point in pretending anymore. It's really just a simple bit of blood magic that allows me to communicate telepathically with anyone I'm touching. If I'm touching two people at once, those two people can also speak telepathically."
"You go first," I tell Mama.
Maria takes Quentin's hand again, and then she takes Mama's. Mama gasps, and then come the waterworks. I try to focus on something else so that they can have their moment. But Maria meets my eyes while Quentin and Mama talk.
"I'm so sorry about my brother,"
Maria whispers.
"I feel like this has all been my fault. I should have seen him for what he was and not who I wanted him to be."
"Did you know about him being a born magician?" I ask. She nods. "I taught him how to keep his magic a secret from the rest of the family. At some point, he started keeping secrets from me too. What makes being a born magician so special? It's like Dylan and I are connected somehow. Maria's expression saddens. There are rules against me explaining. With a flick of her fingers, she produces a card out of thin air. Keep this on you, and don't let anyone see it. As long as you have it, they can come to you. Who? But Maria just hands me the card. International League of Magicians. You can't be serious, I say. Even the supernatural world has its secret societies, says Maria. They'll find you when the moment is right. My mind spins at the idea that there is a whole organization of magicians out there that not even the Bureau knows about. It also makes me wonder if Dylan knew about them and what he thought about it. I think of Elsie, my real friend, and decide to ask the question I know she'd want to get an answer to. Was Vanquish really breaking up? Dylan said that you didn't get along and that you were fighting, and you really wanted to be a training agent like Fiona. Maria raises an eyebrow. And I answered my own question. I say, Dylan said whatever it took to make you out to be the bad guy. Maria gives me a sad nod. Although I did put in my training agent transfer papers. But Quentin was going to transfer as well. When we graduated from junior agent training, we agreed, 5 years as field agents, and then 5 years as training agents. And, at the end, we'd stick with the one we liked best. I smile. Well, that sounds totally normal. And did you know about Quentin talking to Director Horace about you? Dylan was stealing classified files, using my security codes, and Quentin found out. It's actually what Quentin and I were meeting to discuss when we were taken. I just shake my head. Is it weird that I still miss Dylan a little? Even though he lied over and over? If it is, then I'm just as weird. After a moment, Maria says a little more cheerfully, maybe some good can still come from this. Dylan can't hurt anyone where he's going. And now that I've been outed as a magician, I promise you won't have to be alone anymore. We'll do it together. It's my turn to talk to Quentin. It feels like there's static inside my brain when I touch Maria's hand. Chicken Little, comes Quentin's voice in my head. How's it going? Is all I can think to say. Oh, you know. Just having the best nap ever. I laugh at that. Are you okay in there? Are you hurting? I'm dreaming. Remember how I always said I wanted to go bass fishing? And you would tease me that nobody under 50 goes fishing? Yeah, because it's true. I grin. True or not, I'm in the middle of a big wide lake with my feet kicked up on the edge of the boat. I could get used to relaxation like this. I shake my head. Only you would dream about fishing. You don't know what you're missing. Quentin's tone turns sad. Magnus came by earlier. He told me about you being a magician like Maria. About all the things you've had to deal with since you touched the crystal ball. I never meant to throw you into a situation like that. It's cool. If I didn't come to the Bureau, then I never would have found you. I should have known if anyone could, it'd be you. You've always been amazing, sis. You did this all on your own. I don't like doing things on my own. It's scary, and I never know if it'll work out. That's part of growing up, Amari, says Quentin. You don't need me anymore. As long as you bet on yourself and believe you can do anything, you can. That's why I need you to make me a promise, okay? Okay. Mama told me how obsessed you were with finding me. Promise me you won't spend your life beside this bed waiting for me to wake up. Go out and do and see everything. That's what I want for you. Be as great as I know you can be. When I do wake up, and I will, I expect to hear lots of stories. Mama has to stop by her job on the way home. She was worried she might get in trouble for missing a couple days to be with me and Quentin. But one call from Chief Crow to the president of the hospital, and not only is it okay, she's even getting paid for the time she missed. It gets hot sitting in Mama's car with no AC, so I cross the street to a Supernatural newsstand tucked inside an alleyway. You'd think I'd get some slack on the price since my face is on the cover of so many magazines, but that only makes the hobgoblin charge me double.
Yous can obviously affords it. It smirks. Big shot like yous.
I take a copy of Harper's Bazaar and find a seat on a shaded bench under a tree. The magazine caught my eye because me and Maria's faces were both on the cover beneath the headline, The Good Magicians. It's proof that at least some people are rethinking how they feel about us.
May I sit here?
Asks an older man in a dark blue suit. He's got messy salt and pepper hair and a handlebar mustache.
Sure, I say, scooting over a little to give him some room.
He takes a seat and places his cane in his lap.
Lovely weather, isn't it?
I guess so, I say. Maybe if it wasn't this hot. Wouldn't be so bad if I was on the beach, though. The guy snaps his fingers, and suddenly, our bench isn't next to the hospital anymore. It's sitting in white sand, leading to a clear blue ocean that stretches out to the horizon. The sun sets behind us, and a cool wind whips across my face.
Better?
I turn and look at the man, hoping this is the meeting I've been waiting for.
Are you from the League of Magicians?
He dips his head.
Cosimo Galileo Leonardo di Pazzi at your service.
But my colleagues call me Cosmo. My ancestor helped Vladimir create the spell you conjured to save yourself the other day. Knights of the Round.
Is that what happened? I didn't really know what I was doing.
It's why your magic took over, says Cosmo. Through sheer willpower and self-belief, you summoned up all your magic and demanded it take action. And my dear girl, it heeded your call.
I think about that. It makes me wonder if the smaller snake in my constellation with Director Horace was actually my own magic. It was separate because it was acting on its own, responding to what I wanted and how I felt. Unstoppable.
Who are you guys? I ask. Have you always been around?
Cosmo wrinkles his brow.
The terrible magicians the supernatural world has come to know in these last 7 centuries have all been newly made apprentices of Moreau. The League of Magicians, on the other hand, are the recipients of magic handed down through the years from a spare few of Vladimir's original apprentices. We exist entirely separate from the Bureau, although we have allowed the Van Helsing magicians into our ranks, the latest being Maria Van Helsing.
Is she in trouble now that everyone knows she's a magician? I ask.
You and Maria represent a situation the League has never dealt with. While many of us, including myself, have long advocated revealing ourselves to the Bureau and the rest of the supernatural world, the majority of our order still believes it's safer to continue to pose as ordinary people. But then, perhaps you will tell us how to proceed?
Me?
I ask. The corner of his mouth lifts.
Or will it be Dylan Van Helsing?
I lean closer.
What are you saying?
I'm saying the next 2 born magicians have both been identified. That makes it a brand new age, like all those born magicians that came before. Your connection, be it as friends or rivals, has the potential to shape the world, child. Consider these words both a courtesy and a very dire warning. I leaned back, eyes wide. Suddenly, we're back on the side street next to the hospital. You are hereby invited to join the League of Magicians, Amari Peters. He grins as he gets to his feet. With all that's to come, I do hope you accept the invitation. And with a bow of his head, Cosmo shrinks into a bird and flaps away. After a full day of freaking out, I decide not to worry about Cosmo's warning. Not today, anyway. What Maria said back in Quentin's room is what finally allowed me to chill. With Dylan locked away for his crimes, hopefully for many years to come, whatever connection we share won't matter for a long time. For right now, since summer camp at the Bureau is still canceled until next year, I've decided to put my thoughts and energy into something else. And since I kinda sorta saved the supernatural world from a second war with the Knight Brothers, revealed Dylan as the Bureau's traitor, and retrieved the Black Book and the Black Key, the Supernatural World Congress and the Bureau of Supernatural Affairs granted me a congressional request as a reward. After talking it over with Quentin, I knew exactly what request I wanted to make. Mama would kill me if she knew I was headed to a boy's house in the middle of the night. Hero or not, there's just some things I can't get away with. Especially when I've already kissed her goodnight and told her I was headed to bed. But what she doesn't know won't hurt her. I head down the stairs of the apartment building until I get to the door I'm looking for. I give it a good knock. Most times, knocking on somebody's door in this neighborhood this late is asking for trouble. No telling what's liable to happen. But I already know Jaden's mom isn't home. Jaden answers the door, rubbing the sleep out of his eyes. "Would you put his shirt on?" I say. "Mari, what are you doing here in the middle of the night?" "I'll explain after you get dressed." "Dressed? For what?" I cross my arms. "You trust me or not?" Give me a sec. I wait in the doorway while he throws on his Food Mart t-shirt. He's been working there since last week. He's not old enough to do anything but sweep the floors, and I'm sure he's not making the kind of money he used to, but it's a change for the better. "Sorry," he says. "It's the only thing I got that's clean." "That's totally fine," I say. "You know I don't run with those boys of the street no more. Trying to leave that stuff alone, man." "That's actually why I'm here," I say. "Follow me." I wait for him to ask me where we're going, but he just shuts the door behind him and says, "I thought maybe you forgot about me. Haven't seen you around much." "Oh, I've just been busy saving the world and stuff." He laughs. "If you say so." "Wait, we're going to the roof?" "Yep," I say. "Promise me you won't freak out, though." "Girl, please. Don't nothing freak me out." "Okay, Mr. Tough." I step out onto the roof first and turn around to watch Jaden come up after me. His eyes go so big they nearly pop out his head. He ducks back down the stairs and I can't help but laugh. "I know I'm not that sleepy," says Jaden. "Is that a boat?" "Sure is," I say. "You coming or not?"
"Oh, I'm cool. Just give me a sec to get myself right."
He takes a few deep breaths and then steps onto the roof. I lead him inside the Jolly Roger 2.0.
"I don't know what's going on, but this is some next level stuff. How'd you get a boat up here?"
"Let's just say I borrowed it from a family member," I say. "Besides, you haven't seen anything yet." I lead him up onto the deck and hand him an envelope. Jaden takes it and reads it aloud. nomination for consideration for the Bureau of Supernatural Affairs.
Wait, am I being pranked?
No, just listen, okay? You used to be a part of Quentin's tutoring program, but I also know that you gave up on school after he went missing. Well, I'm going to restart the program.
For real?
He asks. You really gonna start it up yourself? I nod. I know I'm not Quentin, but I think it could be just as helpful. Because you are smart, Jaden. You just need someone to have your back, the same way Quentin always had mine. That nomination won't make much sense yet. But if you promise to really give the tutoring a shot, it will. Tonight, I'm going to give you just a taste of what I mean. I touch the wheel, just enough that it lifts off the roof. Jaden's jaw drops. I give him a wide grin. Tonight, we're going to go look at some trains. This is Imani Parks. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Amari and the Knight Brothers by B.B. Alston, presented by Balzer and Bray and Harper Audio. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. The director was Anthony Wayner. Executive producer, Almeida Bainan. Text copyright 2021 by B.B. Alston. Production copyright 2021 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.